Good afternoon, folks, and welcome back once again to another edition of the Come Out of Her, My People show. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and yes, we are live on this 27th day of December, 2018. If I didn't mention it already, I am your host, Mark Hall, and I am kind of upset today for a number of reasons, but one of them, of course, is a theme I've talked about now for one way or another several weeks running, and that is, no doubt about it, lawlessness abounds. And it's very clear that a whole lot of stuff is literally going wrong. Well, I started doing this show. It's the longest running show I've done on the network here, simply because it was obvious, well, the better part of a decade ago now, that the answer to the lawlessness that was even then abounding is to come out of her, as Scripture says, to don't participate in the lawlessness, and to understand a whole bunch of other related things. Like, for example, if you don't know what your rights are, you don't have any. And if you don't know the difference between law and fake law, you might as well not worry about it either. So on so many of these fronts, I think what I'm talking about is kind of a consistent pattern. Lawlessness abounds. And of late, it seems like it's gone into warp drive. We see, of course, treason at the highest levels. We see the fact that if you really want to see criminality at work, look at the federal bunglers of investigation, where obstruction of justice and literal destruction of evidence is SOP, standard operating procedure. Now, most peons can't get away with that, but if you're really good at it, I guess you can be a witch hunter and try to overturn an election. So on so many fronts, I understand the frustration of people who look at what's going on and they see the Department of Justice having turned into the Department of Just Us. As you know, I frequently talk about things out of Scripture where it says, justice, justice, you shall pursue. There's to be one law for you and the stranger that dwells among you. Well, that's no longer true. There's one law for the peons. There's a whole different law for the deep state swamp critters. And that's obvious. Now, the problem is a lot of us tend to look at that and get really frustrated. And we say, okay, not much that most of us can do is going to affect the Federal Bureau of Instigation. Not much that most of us can do is going to really make a difference. And that includes voting, because obviously an election doesn't matter. If impeach, 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 or Russia, 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 or whatever the case may be, is all that matters. And on the other hand, people can get away with treason and still be allowed to run for the highest office in the land. We have a whole bunch of elected so-called representative folks that are fixing to go to Washington, D.C. They have already pre-announced. Now get this, and this really upsets me. They have pre-announced that they intend to make war on the people of the United States. A particularly egregious scumbag named Swalwell in California has already said that he wants to seize the American people's guns, Second Amendment, rule of law, concepts of property rights, due process, all of that be damned. And if they don't like it, he's fully intend to nuke some. Now, what do you call that when people come right out and in the presence of two or three witnesses, and there are tens of thousands to this one, admit that they intend to commit treason, which is making war upon the states and the people of these United States? Treason. It's one of the few actual crimes listed in the Constitution, and it carries the death penalty, unless, of course, we live in a land where the Constitution doesn't matter anymore. Well, again, here's the problem I think a lot of us share in terms of frustration. This guy is going to go to Congress, going to put his hand on a Bible, and swear to preserve and protect and defend a Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic, and he is one of them. How's that for not just irony, but literally rubbing people's noses in the destruction of the rule of law? So, yeah, lawlessness abounds. Now, what I want to talk about today is the fact that there really is one incredible power that Americans, well, at least in part, still have. And that's, of course, the concept of trial by jury. I've talked about this before. We're going to talk about it again a little bit more. And yes, I'll admit right up front that trial by jury, like so much of the rest of the Constitution, is, for all practical purposes, folks, dead. in the United States. Now, that doesn't mean there still aren't some lip services being paid to it, and that's, in fact, what inclines me to do this show today, even though, again, we've done it before, but I think it's particularly timely now, and not just because of my personal reason for thinking about it, and that is I got a summons for jury duty the other day coming up in January. Now, I know darn well, and here's what might interest a few folks, that absolutely positively there will be no way that I will be allowed to sit on a jury. Because if you know the first thing about the rule of law, they're going to get you out of there in a New York minute. It will not be permitted for somebody who understands the law to sit on a jury, especially for reasons that we're going to talk about here during the rest of this show. But I want to make a couple of points on that score. I think the reason why this is interesting to folks is because I have heard over the years all kinds of excuses, right? The dog ate my homework. No, that's if you're sitting on the IRS and you want to commit crimes. Okay, how about I don't have a car. I can't easily get to the courthouse. Oh, how about I have to take care of the kids? I have to work. I have this or that, or I'm sick or whatever. Answer. Almost none of those things are really excuses for getting out of so-called jury duty. But I'm telling you, there is one absolutely ironclad way to do it. And that's not, by the way, the reason why I'm doing this show. Just the opposite. But if you don't know that reason, none of the rest matters. All right? So if you're with me, and maybe you already know where I'm headed, because I have talked about this before, as I said, the ironclad way to get out of jury duty is to admit that you know what the founders knew, that you have some understanding of history and law, that you, in other words, know what trial by jury means, and that it's not, repeat, not the same as what now constitutes jury trials. The key word here is jury rigged, right? A jury rigged trial. So let's understand up front. What we have is not what the Constitution once talked about, trial by jury. We have literally jury trials. And that jury is an adjective meaning, half-baked. That's a kind word for on-air. Jury-rigged. Now, let me introduce this concept with something I hope you'll be able to remember. It's one of those words that I talk about frequently. Democracy, demonocracy. A lot of folks that don't know what the form of government we were supposed to have. A republic, madam, if you can keep it. Remember what Ben Franklin said? Think we have a democracy, because they've been lied to, they've been dumbed down, they don't have a clue that, in fact, the Constitution is about the most anti-democracy document you can find. And yes, trial by jury is a chief element of that. So here's kind of how I want to introduce at least some of the things we're going to talk about here in this first segment. Democracy, that word, in no way, shape, or form, democratically, put any adjective, endings, modifiers on it you want to, the word democracy does not appear in any form ever. Not in the Constitution, not in the Bill of Rights, not in the Declaration of Independence. Yeah, as you know, it does appear in some places where the founders said it was, you know, the devil's own government, and such democracies have ever been as short in their lives as they've been violent in their death, so the founders knew better. But the point is, democracy doesn't appear in any of those fundamental documents, Constitution, Bill of Rights, Declaration, even once. But are you ready for this? A reference, explicitly or by reference, to trial by jury appears no less than 4 times in those same documents. And we'll go through them briefly. By the way, if you add in the Fifth Amendment, where it talks about a grand jury, that's not the same as a petty jury or a jury of your peers. It appears once as well, so that makes a total of 5 times. But briefly, trial by jury appears in the Declaration of Independence, where Thomas Jefferson and the founders said the problem with the evil tyrant, the King of Britain, was that he deprived us in many cases of the benefit of trial by jury, and it's capitalized. You find that when you get to the Constitution, right there in Article 3, Section 2, it talks about, and this is kind of interesting, wouldn't it be cool if we still had a Constitution, the trial of all, let's see, what about all don't we understand anymore, all crimes, except in cases of impeachment, shall be by jury, trial by jury. And such trial, and they capitalize it, shall be held in the state where the said crime shall have been committed. All right, and it gives some more specifics. But there you go, a reference to trial by jury right there in Article 3 of the Constitution. Well, it's in the Bill of Rights a couple places, too. I already mentioned the Fifth Amendment talks about a grand jury, but Article 6, the Sixth Amendment, says, in all criminal prosecutions. The accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed. A district previously ascertained by law, and a bunch of other things that they ignore too. Now, what happened is, over the years, all of the elements of this, of course, have been undermined, destroyed, done away with, like the concept of the Second Amendment. You know, used to be you had to have a warrant to search somebody. Now you can strip search them in an airport, microwave their bodily parts, and they can't say no if they want to fly, or maybe even avoid arrest. The whole concept, in other words, of due process is pretty well gone, along with things like private property and the likes. But this one's interesting. In all criminal prosecutions, well, to start with, over the years, the Supreme Court has said, well, it doesn't really mean that. We know what it means. It doesn't mean all. It means some. Kind of like, shall not be infringed means unless we want to. So some criminal prosecutions, what they said is, well, it's got to be a big enough. Something that we say is important enough. Now, if you're getting ready to go to jail for 4 months for a crime you didn't commit, I'd say that might be important to some of the peons. Obviously, the black robe priests of another god don't believe so, and they've said, nope, 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 doesn't matter what the Constitution says, we know better. And there is indeed a large part of the rub, folks. The concept of trial by jury is about making sure that the people know better. I say it's anti-democratic. Because, in fact, all it takes is 1/12 of the population, at least if we still had trial by jury, to overturn a bad law. Just 1 in 12 people who actually know, for example, that the Fugitive Slave Act was an abomination, or that the New Jersey magazine ban that they killed a guy for not long ago is an abomination. It's not only a taking of private property, it's not only a violation of the Second Amendment and all kinds of other amendments, too. But if we had trial by jury, the law would have probably been struck down a long time ago. But we don't. And the reason why is what I want to try to address today. So let's go back and do a couple of things here, more or less in order. I've already mentioned that democracy doesn't appear in the Constitution, but trial by jury does. Many, 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 well, an infinite number of times more. Let's go to this quote, one of my favorite quotes from one of my favorite founders, Thomas Jefferson. He said the following, and this really helps to put all this in perspective. Think about what he's saying here. I consider trial by jury as the only anchor yet imagined by man by which a government can be held to the principles of its constitution. Trial by jury is about having an informed populace be able to hold an out-of-control, yes, tyrannical, yes, lawless, yes, completely nutcase, even, judiciary, FBI, you name it, police state, to the principles of a constitution that obviously are long since, for all practical purposes, dead and buried. Imagine, for example, if somebody actually was able to have a trial by jury for a crime committed in an airport of saying, do you have a warrant? Can you imagine? Not going to happen. Imagine any of the thousands of cases where people have been put away for various imagined crimes having to do with the right to keep and bear arms that if we had a constitution, simply would be no law whatsoever. But people are being convicted over and over again. Now, one of the problems, of course, is that there have, in fact, been cases, they don't get reported very often, where, for example, an inner-city black mom in Chicago or Los Angeles has an inexpensive weapon because it's all she can afford to defend herself from the gangbangers, drug dealers, and other evil people that infest the neighborhoods, since most of the other folks have been disarmed, except for those that are the aforementioned. And she is guilty of having this weapon, and so they tried to throw her in jail. Well, a jury of her peers, if we had such a thing, could say, hell no. That's an asinine law. And all it takes is 1 person in 12 to say no. And again, if we had trial by jury as opposed to a jury-rigged trial, that law in that case would be overturned. And what you find is, if you go back and look at history, probably the most famous acts and cases had to do with the Civil War era in America when various juries, in the North particularly, refused to convict people because they didn't believe that the Fugitive Slave Act was law. They didn't like the idea of returning escaped slaves to their masters, even if they were in a part of the country where slavery, at least ostensibly, was illegal, and they refused to convict. So what this is called is jury nullification. the amazing idea, actually, again, once ensconced in the Constitution, certainly in the British common law, that a jury, a randomly selected jury of people's peers, could say no to bad laws that, in fact, Amjur and once upon a time when we had a constitution, the rest of the common law said, well, they're no law whatsoever anyway. Now, for a little bit more history, of course, if you go back and look at the history of Britain and the most famous case perhaps in the history of the juries, it has to do with a fella that you may have heard of because Pennsylvania is named for him, William Penn. He was a preacher and a Quaker, and he was tried in Britain. This is part of the reason why people like him came to a new land looking for religious freedom. But he was tried for preaching what they called subversive and unlawful religious doctrine. And the judge, who just happened to be the Lord Mayor of London, Samuel Starling, presided over the case and basically decreed he was guilty and to hell with anybody who says otherwise. There would be no other verdict permitted. But they had a jury. The jury was supposed to slam dunk what he said. And here's what he told the jury. Now, I'll go ahead and read what he told the jury. In a minute, I'm going to read what jurors are told today by judges that I will call law-breaking, oath-breaking, black-robed priests of some other god. "You are not to determine what the law is," said the Lord Mayor. "The law is clear. You must decide only if the defendant," meaning William Penn, "violated the law as I've given it to you." The law as I have given it to you. "And finding that they have, for they have admitted to the fact, you must find them guilty whether you like the law or not. You cannot determine what the law is," unquote. And the jurors basically told the Lord Mayor what he could do with that. And when he didn't receive the commanded verdict, the judge ordered the jurors to be punished without mercy, imprisoned under the most vile of conditions. And folks, what they subjected these jurors to is probably not even printable, much less talked about, or at least polite company on radio. Suffice it to say, cruel and unusual punishment is also probably related to this, coming along a little bit later. The jurors, though, are to be held forever as heroes because they didn't cave. And here's what they decided. They said the moral law of God superseded any man-made law. And the case of William Penn versus the judge, Samuel Starling, became literally the benchmark, the common law precedent upon which this nation, and I'm talking about the formerly free United States of America, and its trial by jury system was founded. And of course, as you know, the rest of the story, Penn left that nation, came seeking freedom, and eventually Pennsylvania was named for the man. Another famous case, the first one to happen, jury nullification in America, occurred in 1735. This is still pre-Revolutionary War. It involved a fellow you may have heard of, John Peter Zenger. He published the New York Weekly Journal, and he printed facts, but they weren't particularly flattering, about then New York Governor William Cosby, an Englishman. And the Brits didn't like that at all. And essentially, the jury that heard Zenger's case decided that English libel law was not law at all, was not what they wanted to support, and they acquitted the man. And the fact that colonists would dare to nullify English law, remember, William Penn had already helped establish the precedent, or at least the brave jury that stood up for him did, that caused real upset to the Brits, who decided, after several more cases of the like were seen, let's start transporting those folks back to England. It won't be a jury of their peers. They're thousands of miles away, but we can rig it here. And, the English juries won't really care about the blankety-blankin colonists. And as a result, the denial of trial by jury, those colonists wrote about later in that Declaration of Independence. We've already read that. And that became one of the most important motivating factors behind the American Revolution. Isn't it funny, folks, that here we are in a land where the colonists, the founders, and just about anybody else who knew what was going on in 1775 would have already, no doubt, taken up arms a long time before the United States got to this particularly heinous point. And we'll continue to talk about that as we go through some of the other things here. I've already mentioned the rest of the history. Of course, the Fugitive Slave Act, northern jurors refused to convict. They nullified the onerous and unjust law. And of course, perhaps what I'm going to talk about next, or I've already mentioned, is a real reason why there's such great concern on the part of the powers that be. Because when you gang rape the Second Amendment, there are a lot of folks that are certainly going to think, you know, jury nullification to overturn bad laws, possession laws, theft of private property, shall not be infringed. Again, all it takes is one juror out of 12, well, at least if we had trial by jury, to overturn that. And now you know, given that that kind of thing simply will not be permitted, it was necessary to destroy trial by jury. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit when we come back about some of the ways that that's been done, but let's talk about what a jury once was and what trial by jury once included, and then you'll know what I'm referring to here. For one, a jury of peers meant people who, hey, guess what? They might actually know the defendant. Think about it, folks. Who better to judge whether or not Joe Blow did it than somebody who's known Joe Blow all his life? They would have been asked, can you be impartial? Yeah, I've known the man a long time. Is that a reason to say that person's not fit to sit on a jury? No. He's a peer, by definition. Now, another element was it was to be a random jury. You go out to the local community, you pick 12 people randomly. That's kind of helpful because it turns out, if you go through the numbers, as a great, wonderful libertarian writer named Vince Aprinowitz has for a long time, you find some really simple things. For example, 1 in 12 is a pretty small proportion. And basically, if you go through the math and you say, okay, what does it take to get a unanimous conviction among 12 people randomly selected for an unjust law? Think about that. You have to find 12 people randomly selected who are too stupid to know that something like the Fugitive Slave Act or a law that says you can't have a self-defense weapon that the Constitution says shall not be infringed. Now, you might find nowadays in dumbed-down America, you might find half the people that don't know any better. But you're going to have a heck of a time finding a whole bunch of people that are completely ignorant enough to get a unanimous verdict. Well, so what do? Here's where the rubber meets the road. You take the ones that know better and you eliminate them. And there are all kinds of ways for doing that, and that's what we're going to come back and talk about after the break. But among other things, if they have some knowledge of the facts or the law, or if they have some knowledge of the defendant, or any of a bunch of reasons, we'll just simply say, no, can't sit on the jury. Do you understand? I remember sitting on a jury years ago. The only time I've been on a jury in my life, I ended up being foreman. And in that case, the defendant wanted an engineer. And they didn't, the other side basically didn't have a big problem. They were out of challenges. But they wanted some people on the defense side who had an understanding of, the technical issues that were going to be discussed in the trial. In most cases, folks, if you have any kind of an understanding like that, you'll be thrown off. And that, of course, leads me to the process. You've heard the term, probably, voir dire. Used to be, voir dire had something to do with the truth. In other words, if there was a reason why somebody was known to be a liar and they got randomly selected, but you knew the guy was a total scumbag, couldn't be trusted to tell the truth, like, say, I don't know, a whoremeister James Comey, who'd shown that he couldn't be trusted. Well, you could throw him off for cause. But other than that, nope. That person was to sit on the jury. Well, nowadays, the joke, of course, you've probably heard this because I've talked about it many times. The joke is that voir dire is French for jury tampering. You've got shows on TV like Bull that's all about how to do jury tampering and how wonderful it is to pick jurors that can be properly manipulated. As a matter of fact, the point of the TV show is, for the most part, it's all won or lost in picking the right jury. I've had at least one defense attorney, an acquaintance years ago, who told me, Mark, I can get any verdict I want. I pick the jury and the trial's over. And guess what, folks? That's not at all what trial by jury was supposed to be. A jury-rigged trial? You betcha. That's another thing entirely. We'll pick it up there when we get back. Red, white, and blue. Fellow patriots. America's counting on you. And I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees. There's no point to life without liberty, so I'll stand for what's right. As long as I breathe, I'd rather die on my feet. All right, folks, we are back. This is the Come Out of Her, My People show. I'm your host, Mark Call. Today we're talking about what was once called, we don't have it anymore, trial by jury. It appears over and over again in the Constitution as one of those things that we were supposed to have, but kind of like so many things in the document, from shall not be infringed to the right to a warrant and the right to be free of illegal search and seizure and all kinds of other stuff that's just not politically correct anymore. It's gone the way of the dodo. But that doesn't mean that there aren't still some things we need to do, and that is the focus of the show today. Let's call this one trial by jury. It's not the same as jury rigged. Yes, there are things we can do about all of this. And let me start off with one of the things that we can do by just simply pointing out the reason why I went through some of the history and some of the understanding about what trial by jury once was because it really is, as Jefferson said, the most important thing ever devised by the mind of man by which a government, if we had it, could be held to the principles of its constitution. Since we don't have it anymore, I think it's clear why we've come so far away from all of that. And the way to get back is the big question. And given that, Mark, what you've just finished saying is that if somebody knows what we are now talking about, and I'll give you a couple more quotes in just a second here, they're going to be stricken from the jury. Let me say this again, folks. The number one way, if you want to get out of jury duty, and I do not advise that. I'm not doing this show for that purpose. Now, I have some things that I think are important to understand, so we'll come back to all of that. But again, this is not about getting out of jury duty. This is about understanding the power of the jury in a once free society and what we have an obligation to know. And here are some of those things. Here, example, several quotes from founders and people that have written about, talked about, and indeed put a lot of this stuff in law for centuries. John Jay, the first U.S. Supreme Court justice in 1789, said, "The jury has the right to judge both the law as well as the fact in controversy." And there, folks, is the rub. That is what is gone. That is how trial by jury has become jury rigged. If you know that simple fact, let me say it again. If you know that a juror has not only the right, but the obligation to judge the fact and the law, you won't be allowed to sit on a jury. The thing that's interesting is, neither will anybody else that knows that. Now imagine the power of a, would-be juror sitting in a courtroom full of people who are being jury-tampered, voir dired, to find out if they're suitably ignorant to sit on a jury. And they may be whining, "I can't afford a babysitter, I can't do this." Imagine how those young mothers or old folks or anybody else with an excuse that just doesn't want to sit there would react if they knew that if you didn't have complete ignorance of the law, that fact alone would get you out. Don't have to give a judge an excuse. All you have to do is simply tell the judge what John Jay just first said. How about this one? A fellow named John Adams. They don't teach about him anymore either, but the second president, one of the founders and signers of the Declaration, said this: "It's not only the juror's right, but his duty to find the verdict according to his own best understanding, judgment, and conscience, even though in direct opposition to the direction of the court." Ever heard of Judge Oliver Wendell Holmes, Supreme Court Justice? He said, quote, "The jury has the power to bring a verdict in the teeth of both law and fact." Samuel P. Chase, one of the signers of the Declaration, also a Supreme Court Justice after the Revolutionary War, said, "The jury has the right to determine both the law and the facts." Again, it's real simple. So here is one of the things that I will suggest. Commit one or two or even just the concept of these quotes to memory. The juror, that would be me if I'm selected, has not only the right but the obligation to judge the facts and the law according to my own conscience. Now, here we go to the current day. And actually, folks, in this case, I've talked about it. I'm not going to spend as much time on it today. Years ago, because I was in Boulder County at the time, Gilpin County, where one of the biggest jury gang rapes in modern history happened, You may have heard the name Laura Creho. I interviewed Laura, met her on a number of occasions. Unfortunately, I discovered today when I was looking up some background for this show, she passed about a year ago, was only in her early 50s, which is a sad thing. But in any case, she brought a famous case because, well, to make a long story short, in Gilpin County, which is a little mountain community just west of Boulder up in the mountains, there were three, not one, not two, but three, I would say, crooked judges. I'll name them, okay? Frederick B. Rogers, Henry Nieto, and Judge Kenneth Barnhill, all of whom got together and said, we're looking for a case to really nail somebody that thinks they still have a right to judge the facts and the law. And along came Laura Creho, and they tried to, they actually succeeded in convicting her of various crimes because she knew. What she did, her crime basically consisted of asking what the law said and what the penalties were going to be for a young lady who was being tried in that case for possession of a controlled substance. And Laura Creho said that's a pretty severe penalty for somebody just having a teeny bit of something that Big Brother says they're not supposed to have. She refused to convict. And when the judge found out about it, aha, we got our patsy. So they nailed her. Ironically, get this, she was not allowed trial by jury. Because, of course, it might have come up in the trial. I guarantee you, knowing the attorney here that was involved, a really good guy named Paul Grant, that it would have come up. And the jury would have found out exactly what was going on here. Now, they may have been cowed because these three particular criminals, and I say that with knowledge of forethought, we're looking for a reason to destroy the idea of jury nullification. As a matter of fact, here's the interesting part. Summer of 1996, just before all of this happened, one of these so-called judges, Frederick B. Rogers, wrote an article for the Judges Journal of the American Bar Association about jury nullification. And he basically said, hey, here we go. This group called FIJA, the Fully Informed Jury Association, that's actually telling people about their rights under the Constitution is a real threat. We've worked hard to destroy trial by jury. We're not going to let that happen, essentially. And yes, I'm paraphrasing it. He goes through a bunch of stuff. And quite frankly, the article is disgusting. I've got a copy sitting here in front of me. But he says, if nullification is even discussed by a jury panelist during voir dire, a judge's delicacy and care are required. And I read that, and of course, you know, I think about the Wicked Witch of the West. These things must be done delicately. We can't have people knowing that the jury really does have a right to judge the facts and the law, because we're going to try to throw something completely different at them. Now, here's where I could go a whole bunch of different ways, but I do want to mention this, right? These judges, so-called judges, have committed an atrocity, and they didn't come up with it. They're not that innovative. It was literally building upon something that has happened over 100 years at this point. Essentially, the courts have ruled over the years that, yeah, no doubt about it. Common law is real clear. Trial by jury means certain things. 12. Randomly selected people. Well, we've pretty gotten rid of the randomly selected part, and we've pretty well gotten rid of the jury of peers part, and we're pretty well getting rid of the idea that they even have any knowledge of anything useful part. But part of the progression, I guess you would say, the progressive move towards jury trial instead of trial by jury, was to have the court essentially say over a number of cases, well, look, the jurors may have this right. Adams and Jefferson and all those other people, Samuel Chase, they may be right that the juror has the ability, even the obligation, to judge the facts and the law, but hey, if they're ignorant, we don't have to tell them. So originally they started saying, all right, well, we're not obligated to tell them. And then it got to the point where, no, if an attorney even tries to tell them, we might hold him in contempt of court. Remember, this is the American Bar Association. Guess who he's beholden to? We got all kinds of leverage because they expect to come back before this court. So the folks like Paul Grant, who were willing to go forward with Laura Creho and really nail this thing, are pretty rare. They're few and far between. Now, here's what Paul Grant in the Laura Creho case made very clear. And by the way, he did get her conviction overturned on appeal. And it had to do with what the judges were doing. He even called it a conspiracy, correctly. He said the judges instruct the jury that they have to take the law as the judge gives it to them, even if they disagree with it. And that's a lie. And the judges know it's a lie. And he goes on to say why they do it, as if it wasn't already obvious. But, yeah, the point is, they stand right there and they lie to jurors, said Paul Grant. They've been doing it for the last century and a half or more. But now, folks, they've gone over the top with this. Now, I mentioned I have some personal experience to relate. So let me lay out two things. One, for at least a decade or more at this point, I have been talking about system that was once called trial by jury and what's happened to it. And, well, ever since Laura Creho case, so that's been over 20 years at this point. The last time I was given a summons is several years ago here where we're living now in this little mountain community. As it turned out, interestingly enough, it was a Second Amendment case. I didn't sit on the jury, as you can guess why at this point. But the poor guy was being railroaded because somebody had come onto his property, and on this guy's own property, as I recall the case, this is all we were told about it in advance while we were sitting in the prospective jury pool. He had come out and brandished a weapon, which is a crime, so they say. Now, the Constitution says you have a right to keep and bear arms. And one of the things that was really made clear here is, does anybody really believe that? And if a juror, a prospective juror, actually indicated they knew what shall not be infringed meant, they were out of there. But there's more. Now, this is where I saw it up close and personal. And quite frankly, folks, this upset me enough. I had trouble keeping my mouth shut right there in the court. And as it turned out, I did not get called to go up, or I would have in fact managed, I hoped and prayed, to get the entire courtroom released. Because what the judge said was the following. He told any prospective juror, and he required each one of them as they were selected, no objection, Your Honor, let this guy sit, or this gal sit. Will you swear to judge the facts only and the law as I give it to you? That was the oath. I kid you not. And it's almost universal nowadays. The oath that these so-called judges, these black-robed priests of another god who are no, they're not ignorant. They know blankety-blank and well what they're doing. They are undermining the constitutional requirement of trial by jury and replacing it with a fake, a jury rig. And they're telling jurors if they know better, if they know what John Adams, John Jay, Samuel P. Chase, and every single Supreme Court justice that's ever had the opportunity to rule on it has known, the juror has not only the right, but the obligation to judge the facts and the law. You're out of here. So, is it clear where I'm headed with all of this? I will suggest to people what you need to know is what we've been talking about. Just a quote. And my father passed away today, so I'm kind of remembering some of that. But one of the things my dad used to say when I was growing up, when I did something stupid or I asked a question that I already knew the answer to, he wasn't going to let me do whatever it was that I wanted to for whatever reason. And he would sometimes say, the answer to that question, son, is not no, it's hell no. And so let me, I do clean it up for the judge. No, I wouldn't say this, but you got to know I'm thinking it. Will you swear to judge the facts only and the laws I give it to you? The answer's not just no, it's hell no. Now, what I would really say is, Your Honor, in good conscience, I can swear to no such unconstitutional oath. Because I know, as John Jay and John Adams and any number of people that are no longer allowed to be taught in the schools said, the juror has not only the right, but the obligation to judge the facts and the law. So since I know the Constitution, and I know the law, and I know what trial by jury is, absolutely not, no way, can I swear before God to an oath that is an abomination to him and to our form of government. Now, what do you bet that anybody that heard that is going to be asking, whoa, what just happened? And when the judge then says, well, you're out of here, son. You don't get to sit on this jury. You think there may be people sitting out in the audience that go, well, wait a minute. I'm going to say that too. What was that? Facts and the law. I can say that. Yeah. So seriously, my goal, you want to educate people? You want people to know what's been happening to the rule of law and why it doesn't matter and why trial by jury and so many unconstitutional things are now being literally forced down people's throats? understand the rights, the obligations, and the power of a juror. No, you're not going to sit on the jury. They're going to kick you out of there. But if they have to kick out courtroom after courtroom of prospective jurors, Well, what they're going to do is they're going to rework their procedures, right? The point is, when the question is asked, and this guy in my county asked the question exactly that way, and I will answer. And y'all willing, I'll answer it that way next month. And my goal is to do it so persuasively, so clearly, with historical and brief, because he's not going to let you speak for very long. Just get the part out about John Adams and John Jay and judge the facts and the law. That's enough. And when you are kicked out of the courtroom and told you can't sit on this jury, other folks will take heed. They'll pay attention. And afterwards, I guarantee you, there'll be questions. Now, let me tell you what happened when my wife, a number of years ago, in Boulder County. Oh, yeah, Boulder County is a lot closer to the ground zero with these criminals in Gilpin County. Literally, it's the next county over. Well, they got a lot more clever. So what they did is they would interview a whole bunch of prospective jurors at one time. And they asked her that question. And she gave the right answer. And the judge basically didn't bat an eye. But everybody had a number. Because see, people, there's a line from Ecclesiastes. The problem with lag, you know, when the penalty for a bad act is separated, is that people no longer make the connection. They're unable to connect cause and effect. So here's how they cleverly got around it in the People's Republic of Boulder County. What they did is they said, okay, her number I think was juror number 3. Doesn't matter. All right? And she had that reason. May have been one other person that said something remotely similar. There were another couple people that had some other reason. And the judge took them all, and even people that were excused for cause, but that wasn't as clear right there at the time. Okay, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. So then what happened is, after about half an hour, by which time the judge evidently thought most people will have forgotten what individual jurors said, she told folks the following. All right, jurors number 5, 7, 3, and 14 are excused. Isn't that clever? See, now most people don't know. So my wife got up and left along with a couple of others, and most people are none the wiser. Aren't they clever at getting away with this? Now, I'm going to quote Paul Grant during the initial trial for contempt of Laura Creho, the case there in Gilpin County. He said the following. The court literally was opposing the very same beliefs that Thomas Jefferson and John Adams shared, second and third presidents. And he said this, quote, Jefferson and Adams would be ineligible for jury service today in America. And if they inadvertently managed to find their way onto a jury, they in fact could be prosecuted just like Laura Creho for not having disclosed these seditious ideas. So as you can figure, all right, by the way, they actually tried to convict and succeeded. They convicted her once. It was overturned on appeal, remember? They tried to convict Laura Creho for not having answered a question that she wasn't asked. Not having answered a question she wasn't asked. Now, what the judge here did the last time I saw it was, he'd say, well, you guys have been listening whenever some new juror was called up. You've been listening to everything that's been said here. You got a problem with anything we've said so far? See, that's kind of a catch-all. And, well, at that point, yeah, had I been up there, I would have said, yeah, this unconstitutional oath, Your Honor. And by the way, if I had the opportunity, I'd probably mention, you know, some of us, those that have been in military service, those that have held elected office, those of us that have ever just taken an oath to preserve and protect and defend the Constitution of these United States, well, all of us cannot take that unconstitutional oath you're asking without violating the superior oath that we took before our God to a Constitution that isn't welcome in this courtroom. Ooh. But you get the point. What needs to happen, in other words, is, to be upfront about all of this. I know of people. I've known any number over the years, as you might imagine, given that this has been going on for decades at this point, and I have a number of friends, acquaintances, listeners, people that I've corresponded with, that I have, been on a, in a, some kind of a protest with, you name it, that have, sat before a, voir dire session, jury tampering, and one way or another dealt with this issue. One of the questions always is, well, if you lie, okay, if you pretend to be ignorant and you deliberately don't answer a question correctly that is designed to make sure that anybody that knows what the heck they're talking about, that knows the law or the Constitution or the Bill of Rights, is weeded out, if you lie, you're in trouble. Oh, they're going to pull a Laura Criho on you. You can rest assured. On the other hand, knowing that that's the case, and knowing that for all practical purposes, my chances of ever sitting on a jury in post-constitutional America ever again are zero, I'm simply going to be as upfront as I can with the goal of being vocal, right? Scripture says we're not to keep silent. We see a sword coming upon the land, and guess what? Here's the sword, folks. We're supposed to blow that trumpet and let people know. We have an obligation to let people know. They're not going to let us serve on a jury, but we can at least let those who serve on a jury know. Because I guarantee you, during that trial, as happened with the case that I wasn't allowed to sit on, anybody that knew about the Second Amendment wasn't even in the room for the trial. That guy was already, hung out to dry as soon as the jury was voir dired, and anybody that had any knowledge of what words like shall not be infringement, or the concept of private property, or you name it, wasn't even allowed in there. So, yeah, Attorney Paul Grant with the Laura Criho case was right. There is a conspiracy, and it's been going on in a long time. And what has been done is to destroy the very concept of trial by jury and replace it with a jury-rigged system. So we do need to understand this. We do need to know this. We ought to understand what jury nullification is, even though they have cleverly made sure it is not going to happen. At least it's not going to happen until something changes dramatically, until enough people are aware of it that they begin to rise up and just simply say these kind of things. Now, let me tell you, in one other place where I lived a number of years ago, and in this case, this was a place where we had a cabin, and wasn't where I normally lived or was domiciled, but we were there once a month or maybe twice a month during the summertime. And the trial was going to be, at an extremely inconvenient time, and I was going to have to fly for an hour or so each way, take off a day from work and so forth. And I knew darn well I was going to fly over and fly back if the weather was good. Otherwise, I was going to have to drive for 6 hours, and I wasn't going to sit on the jury. So in that case, I actually talked to the clerk of the court, and I told her, I said, let me be real blunt about this, ma'am. Either you excuse me now, or I guarantee you, if I have to make a 6-hour round trip in a car to sit on that jury, I'm going to make sure everybody in that courtroom knows why I drove so far and why I'm not going to sit on the jury. And I'm going to tell them exactly what I just told you all in the listening audience. I have a right to judge the facts and the law according to my own conscience, and I know the law and the Constitution both. And she said, Mr. Call, you don't have any need to drive all the way over here. You are excused, and we'll take your name off of the jury roster for next time, too. All right, again, that wasn't the desired goal. That's not the goal that I'm suggesting people should be pushing for. The goal is to restore some semblance of a rule of law. But if we don't understand the power of the jury, by the way, that's one of those four boxes in the old joke. What are the four boxes of a free society? Soap, ballot, jury, and cartridge. Use in this order. Well, folks, if we don't know how to use the third one properly, we're getting really close to having to fall back on the last one. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.